It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was the end, a moment ago, of Drive Time with Darusha, starring Jason Darusha with producer Dan Cook, rubbing it in our face all week that they were in Florida. Yeah, and then they're going to come back, and it's going to be nice and mild here in the upper Midwest. They're going to say, well, we brought a little of the warmth with us. I can hear it Monday. By the way, Twins and Braves on the radio tomorrow. Grapefruit League opener, another sign of spring. Another sign of spring. Are the Loons opening the 2025 campaign in L.A. tomorrow? And Andy Greeter, who covers the Loons and the Golden Gophers for the Pioneer Press, is good enough to join us on this Friday evening. Andy, good to visit with you.
Yeah, thanks for being on, Steve.
Yeah, let's get into it. Here we go. It seems like the 2024 campaign wrapped up, and here we go. They go early.
Yeah, they run late and they go early. Yeah, I've had the same feelings as well. I mean, that's a matter of when you have a good season, right? When you're able to advance to the Western Conference semifinals and go deep in the playoffs, and the MLS preseason has always kind of really started in that second week of January, but the starting of the regular season is moved up from early March to late February to mid to late February at this point. So yeah, it's been creeping up as when the season starts more and more in recent years.
And this off season for the Loons was a little bit more normal or traditional, because a year ago, yeah, head coach, right, Eric Ramsey wasn't even around at the beginning of the season, joined.
No.
And it all turned out, but they have had a more normal off season, if you will.
Yeah, I would say last off season was one of the most peculiar ones for any pro franchise in Minnesota, in the U.S., because they didn't have a GM for a long time. They didn't have a head coach until, like you mentioned, I think it was the fourth game of the year. And that was just kind of some issues with the fact that it's an international sport and the people they were hiring had previous obligations at their, you know, former employers, and they needed to fulfill those before they came to Minnesota. So with that, and Eric Ramsey and Khalid El-Ahmad have both been in their positions for, you know, a year at this point, in Khalid's case, or, you know, in Eric's case, probably 10 months or so, but it's provided Eric an opportunity to have a full off season, a full preseason, which he wasn't afforded last year. He joined the team kind of midweek, had a couple of training sessions last March, and was thrown into his first game. This year he had 6 weeks to prepare with his team. He knows who his players are. They made additions in the summer. They made some further additions over the winter, and he's able to tinker and find out what best works for his team. And one of the things that he's discovered is the fact that he feels that they are best with a two-striker formation with Kelvin Yeboah and Taniolo Oshae. And it's intriguing to see the fact that they have two athletic forwards that are going to be able to get forward and get on the end of goal-scoring chances that they think will be created by Robin Lund and Joaquin Pereira. There's still going to be a defensively focused team. That's always going to be Eric Ramsey's kind of calling card. He established that right away last year, and you see that continuing with a five-man back line going into this year. But it's interesting to see the fact that Eric Ramsey is always tinkering, always kind of in the lab of what he wants to do. And now that he has a full season, we're going to see what that's like tomorrow afternoon against LAFC.
Andy Greeter joining us from the Pioneer Press. You can read his work online at TwinCities.com and joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Season opener tomorrow, as Andy mentioned, for the Loons in L.A. We'll get into that in a bit, and a tough opener on the road. But I did want to bring up the road. A year ago, this team was surprisingly good on the road.
Yeah, they were much better on the road than they were at home, which I think is an anomaly when it comes to any pro sport, and especially in MLS, when you are kind of playing for draws and playing for different results when you're away from home. So, yeah, I think they certainly were buoyed by the fact that they were so good away from St. Paul. But, you know, they really want to be a team that can get it done at home, right? I think last year was very peculiar because they started really strong with an interim manager and Cameron Knowles, who's now an assistant coach. And midseason, they kind of hit a lull as they had a lot of absences due to international breaks and injuries, and had a really terrible stretch midsummer, and then they turned it on and were white hot at the end of the year. I think they want to be a little bit more consistent this year. I think they want to take care of business in St. Paul and be a you know, better, more consistent team that can finish in the top four. And they were sixth last year, had to go on the road at the beginning of the postseason, but I feel like they have enough pieces to be a top four team. And when you look at some of the MLS pundits and what they think about this team, they agree with that. They think that they're a top five team, a top four team, that last year wasn't a fluke, that there really is a defensive kind of foundation, and they've got attacking pieces going forward. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to fully put that together. It's a very kind of unpredictable kind of league and season, but we'll see how it goes once they start tomorrow.
And it won't be long, and they'll be at Allianz Field. That's coming up quickly, and we're getting mild weather. I think the snow we have on the ground here in the cities is going to go pretty quickly. But that's coming up March 1. Here we go at home.
I know, and you know, I think it's a week from tomorrow, and the forecast I think is 28 degrees, which is what we dealt this week is downright tropical after being, you know, sub-zero, sub-20 temperatures here this week. My critique on that is the fact that it's a night game. And as everybody knows, it gets colder and crisper at night. And I don't see that there's a reason to play that game at 7:30. I think that game should be at 2:30. If it's sunny, if it's a few degrees warmer, at least you feel a little better if you're out in the sunshine. Sure. I don't understand why that game's at night, but that's just MLS being MLS and trying to fit every game into a 7:30 type kickoff window. And I think it just hurts the fact that you've got families, you've got cold weather games, you got an opportunity to be in the sun. You know, sometimes in the summer you want to have matinees as well. Sun is perfect in the summer, obviously. I just don't understand why that game isn't, mid-afternoon.
Yeah, totally agree. But for the folks that are going to brave it, good luck at Allianz that night. This is a very difficult opener. LAFC is the real deal.
Yeah, they're one of the marquee franchises in MLS. They went to the Western Conference semifinals like Minnesota did last year. They've lifted trophies. They're, you know, as star-studded as anything LA goes. Obviously, they've got, you know, some marquee ownership and Mia Hamm and Nomar Garciaparra and Will Ferrell and Magic Johnson, and they've got the deep pocketbooks to back that up. What's interesting about tomorrow is the fact that they're in a tournament called the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which is a North America, Central America, and Caribbean tournament that you qualify for from the previous year. And they're in that tournament already. So they played a tournament game in Colorado, believe it or not, on Tuesday night when it was 5 degrees and the snow was flying in Denver. They played in the game in those conditions last week, and they lost it. And they have a second leg in that kind of tie, that kind of tournament, and that kind of bracket on Tuesday back in L.A. That's kind of a must-win for them in probably the biggest tournament that they'll play in maybe all year before they get to MLS Cup playoffs. So that's a very important game for them. And they already lost in Colorado. And it's a long and arduous MLS season. That's 34 games, and as we talked about at the top, stretches over 10 months. I wonder about how LAFC is going to treat Saturday's game and how much rotation they're going to have, because they have a very important must-win game on Tuesday. I know that's very convoluted for a lot of American sports fans. But they're a very talented team, but I wonder how much importance they're going to put on it, given the fact that they got CONCACAF Champions Cup coming on Tuesday.
Andy Grider joining us, covering the Loons. They open tomorrow at LAFC and then return next weekend for the home opener at Allianz on the Midway in St. Paul. We want to talk a little Golden Gopher hoop before you've got to run on this Friday night, and that is tomorrow at the Barn, Penn State. And this Golden Gopher team, they go out to L.A. and win them both. I mean, and then they had that three-game winning streak earlier in the Big Ten season, some really nice wins, and then they just look terrible some days. It hard team to figure out.
They are. I think that's kind of an indication of how thin the margin is for this team, right? They've got Dawson Garcia, who's an out-and-out candidate to win Big Ten Player of the Year. He is that dynamic on his day, and when he's going, this team can really ride him and have some pieces around him to be successful. When people are able to take him away and some of the Robin-type characters around the Batman aren't firing, then they kind of look very average and mediocre and bottom half of the Big Ten. But they've been able to figure it out. Some of the transfers, Lukai Patterson from Minneapolis, has really turned it on in the last couple of weeks or so, and really kind of become a Robin-type figure to Dawson Garcia's Batman. And it's been very important for this team. They've been very good defensively. You see them understand what they want to do on that end. And when they share the ball and when they go through Dawson, and if Dawson doesn't have it and guys around him are able to make their shots and kind of create, and they make smart basketball plays, they're able to go to L.A. and beat UCLA on the road at Pauley Pavilion. Everybody knows historically what the Bruins are, and they've got a really good team again this year. USC with Eric Musselman, that's another quality road win regardless.
Yeah.
So getting both of those in a row makes this team look like, hey, they can really do something and finish maybe in the top half of this conference. But like you said, Steve, you rewind a couple of weeks, and they were in a similar spot. They were coming off a ranked win at home against Michigan, a ranked win at home against Oregon. Obviously, they stumbled on the road against Michigan State. But then they came home against last-place Washington, and you go, okay, given what they've done in the last couple of weeks here at the Barn, they should be able to take care of business against a last-place Huskies team. And they played very, very poorly and lost that game. And it was kind of that Jekyll and Hyde type of what are they, hot and cold, reaction to this team. And tomorrow's a very similar example, right? They go to L.A. and are riding high after beating both of those teams, and then now they welcome in Penn State, who they beat in Happy Valley, who comes in as the current Big Ten basement team. And you look at them, you're like, man, this should be a winnable game, but you don't really know exactly what you're going to get. And that's kind of where they're at with this team. You think that they've kind of understood where they're at, but they have to prove it on the court.
Yeah, and between now and the Big Ten tournament, there are opportunities for this team.
Yeah.
Certainly, Wisconsin at Williams Arena is going to be a big showdown. The Badgers,
sure.
That's always great, whether it's in Madison or here, and then on the road at Rutgers to close out the season. But there are opportunities between now and the end of the regular season if they are able to get some help around Garcia, as you outlined.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think that the fact is that it's a new, wilder Big Ten where you only have a certain amount of teams that make the postseason tournament. It's like soccer where you have a couple of teams that get relegated, get left out, get forgotten, and you have to make those top 15 teams to make the tournament. So I think it adds a level of intrigue to it, and the Gophers' recent upswing makes it look possible that they could not only make the tournament but get a bye and not even play on quote-unquote Weakling Wednesday, as it's been termed. And that kind of shows the upside that they have. But yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic to see kind of how tight the Big Ten is as well, right? Like one or two games can swing it from, oh man, we can get a Big Ten tournament bye, or we cannot make the tournament at all. I think that's kind of a very interesting dynamic in kind of an intrigue level that you see in conference play that you didn't have previous years.
Yeah, and coming up at home, Penn State, Northwestern, below them in the standings. They've got Rutgers, as I pointed out. You know, really the only landmine, they've got Nebraska. They're about in the same spot in the standings. Really the only super tough one is that one with the Badgers at the barn.
Yeah, for sure. And the Badgers are a top three team, top three or four team in the Big Ten. I think they're a top 15 team in the country. They've got some transfers that have come in. They've got some big men from Minnesota, shockingly, that are good players for them. That always seems to be the way that things have worked in the border battle between the two teams. So, that'll be a really difficult game. What's interesting about that is the fact that given how hot and cold this Gopher team has been, there was a moment in Madison when they had an hour-long meeting post-game, kind of come-to-Jesus dress down, if you will, from Ben Johnson about kind of where things were with the team and just kind of where they needed to build on and kind of improve upon. And I think you're starting to see that now. You're starting to see, there were two of them. There was one in Indiana that was more the kind of coming to Jesus dress down moment. And then in Madison, it was more of a team-led kind of, hey, we've got enough pride within our room about kind of being a team that can do something and kind of player-led type of moment. So they've had multiple times where they've gotten beat substantially, significantly on the road and have had to kind of rally. And in Madison was one of those. And we've seen them kind of turn it around. Now can they not only kind of have that kind of look in the mirror type moment like they did at the Kohl Center, but can they beat them at home, which would be a nice little bow on everything if they're able to do it. But like you said, in these last five games, I think three of them are certainly winnable. They go on the road to Nebraska. That'll be difficult. Nebraska is a good team. They've kind of been a little hot and cold themselves. And Wisconsin is clearly the biggest test and obviously the rivalry game. So the barn should be rocking, and we'll see if the Gophers can respond in a couple of weeks to that one.
Andy, always great. Enjoy your Friday night.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right, there he is, Andy Grittier, Pioneer Press, online, TwinCities.com. John Schuster, Coldwell Banker Hotline. All the thanks there. Quick break. We'll come back. Steve in for Henry tonight. Jonathan Lowe is our producer here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
There it is. The theme. We brought it up on the show last night, and Jonathan, you brought the story up about Amazon MGM Studios gaining control of the James Bond franchise, but beyond that, creative control, because there were other people that had Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson apparently have ceded creative oversight of their family story James Bond franchise to Amazon MGM Studios. So there's been all this talk about a new Bond, and we're not going to speculate because there's dozens of actors rumored to be in the mix. But I have had this argument and this discussion with people before who love the James Bond franchise, going all the way back to the Sean Connery days. And I really think this depends on age and when you started becoming a fan to the Bond films, on who your favorite James Bond is of all time. And a number of actors have played Bond, but the guy who did most recently, Daniel Craig, was phenomenal. Kind of brooding bad boy, had some baggage, if you will. I thought was a really cool take on the character. So Daniel Craig makes my top three. And then for me, because when I first saw James Bond movies, I was a kid, and the first one I saw on the silver screen was Roger Moore, and Live and Let Die is one of the more famous James Bond movies of all time and of that era, and that was kind of Roger Moore in his prime. And I've always been a fan of his. Not really a tough guy, but had skills and really played the part well as a secret agent, but could also fit into any situation. Especially with the wealthy bad guys he appeared to be going after in each and every film. And then, of course, a lot of people think that the gold standard is Sean Connery. So I go back and forth because I absolutely love Goldfinger. One of my favorite Bond films, right up there with Live and Let Die and Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. So it's almost a flip of a coin. But if I had to pick, I would still say Roger Moore is my favorite Bond, with Sean Connery a very close second, and then Daniel Craig a strong third. Outstanding as Bond. I don't know, were you ever a big fan of the Bond films, Jonathan?
I should be, but I've never really been a big Bond connoisseur. I've seen a couple of the movies, but
yeah, for sure.
I haven't really dove into the lexicon and the mythology of Bond, even though it's as far as stuff I enjoy and stuff I like, it's up my alley. It really is.
Yeah. I've always thought, you know, some certainly better than others. There's certainly people who played Bond. It'll be very interesting to see once this deal finally gets done and money exchanges hands and Amazon, MGM gets total creative control, and then ultimately who they give the reins to. I just hope that they have respect for what's been done in the past. I know it's 2025 and beyond, and before they start filming the next one, it could be 2026. Who knows who the next Bond will be. But I hope they do have some respect for what's been done to this point, and don't make a mess of it, if you will. But I wanted to throw it out there for you. We've got a few minutes. It's a Friday night. Have a little fun. Let's settle it on the talk and text line. Best Bond ever. I have a feeling I think I know who's going to get the most votes. You can once again call, but text would be ideal. 651-461-9226. So it looks like the creative rights to James Bond are going to change hands. Who's the best Bond ever? And beyond that, for a bonus, your favorite Bond film. Throw that in there as well. It is 6:31. We've got weather coming up in a moment. It is the Lake Show. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake tonight. And, of course, Jonathan Lowe is our producer here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched, no life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, you heard that the creative control of the James Bond franchise could change hands. Barbara Broccoli and the family could give up that creative control. Now, we're talking $1 billion with a B to give Amazon MGM total creative control over the series. Scripts, whoever plays Bond, all of that sort of stuff going forward. We haven't had a new James Bond named. I'm sure that'll certainly be a big deal. But favorite James Bond of all time. I know a number of actors have played, but my top three, Daniel Craig at 3, Sean Connery, close second, like 1B, and Roger Moore, the 1A. But maybe the first Bond movie I saw in a theater was Live and Let Die, so that had an impact and really kind of fell in love with it. But I would have to say maybe my favorite Bond movie is Goldfinger. Let's go to Jeff Sauk Rapids. You're on our talk and text line on this Friday night. How you doing, Jeff?
Steve, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for asking. But you and I are going to get into it.
All Steve, right.
Stevie T, my favorite, Steve T. Sean Connery, period.
Hands down.
James Bond. Hands down, James Bond, irreplaceable. The rest were, of course, we
pretenders.
Had to have replacements.
Yeah.
But amateurs. I mean, just, no, maybe, you know, Roger Moore was pretty good as a fill-in. But okay. That's about as far as it went.
All right, what's your favorite James Bond movie? If it shows up on cable TV, you stop and you watch a while.
Oh, well, obviously Goldfinger right off the get-go.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
I mean, this is like saying that, you know, we should have in the Dirty Harry series, we should have somebody other than Clint Eastwood. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. There are some that are just simply irreplaceable. That's that. Try your best, but it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you know, in recent years, it really among all the Bond movies, Casino Royale was remade with Daniel Craig. I thought he was phenomenal in that. I thought as a modern Bond, a good spin.
Daniel Craig never did anything for me.
Yeah,
no, he never did.
All right,
he's too short. He's just a little guy.
Yeah, not big enough. Well, and that was maybe the knock on Roger Moore, that he didn't look like he could in reality beat anybody up. You know, where Sean Connery had that, where it was kind of like, you know, he was menacing. Looked like he could have handled himself. Well, hey, Jeff, good to visit with you. Enjoy the mild weekend.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate talking to you.
Yeah, there he is, Jeff Sauk Rapids, joining us. Someone texted, Bond died in the last episode, didn't he? I mean, James Bond never dies. There's work to be done. There is work to be done. There are always rich guys trying to take over the world. And it really isn't that the reoccurring theme in the Bond movies? And it still rings true in 2025.
Well, I mean,
there are still rich guys trying to take over the world.
Well, the thing is, you have to suspend reality, I guess.
Well, for sure.
Because
this
guy that was thought up, I believe, after World War II.
Yeah.
You know, if he was actually around and still kicking, he'd be over 100 years old. So that's why you got to bring in Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton and Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig. Because the whole thing about the James Bond ethos is that it's a way of life.
Well, and I also think the appeal of it for me is that there is someone who is loyal to the rule of law and order and will save us. Because you think about the theme in Goldfinger. What did Goldfinger want to do? He wanted to detonate a nuclear device in Fort Knox and throw the world finances into turmoil. So once again, James Bond lives. But the question here is your favorite Bond. Do you agree with Jeff? 100% Sean Connery, nobody else comes close. Do you have another favorite Bond? And then beyond that, favorite film. Producer Josh Wheeler's never seen a single 007 movie. If Josh should bring that up to Pete Najarian and Dave Schwartz on the Huddle Sunday morning and see if Pete or Dave have ever seen a Bond movie. I have a feeling they might laugh at Josh over that.
I mean, it's a slow time. I know that the Wild will be back in. The Wolves get back in tonight into action.
Gophers are still going.
Yep, Loons start
Twins
tomorrow.
Getting underway.
But it's still kind of a slow time. Everything has to ramp up. They should have time for a question like that during the show.
Now, the critics have weighed in on Bond films. And one of the sites that I go to, Rotten Tomatoes, I don't know if you go there if you're planning to see something on the silver screen. And I don't use it as the 100% guide. Well, they didn't like it on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not going to go to the movies. Because in reality, only a handful of films, you know, get that 90-plus rankings. But they did rank all the Bond films. And number one, as expected, Goldfinger. And the top three are Sean Connery movies. Number two on their list, From Russia with Love. Number three, Dr. No. So there you have it. Goldfinger, From Russia with Love, Dr. No. Number four on their list, Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. I thought it was terrific. And then another Daniel Craig movie, Skyfall. I thought that was pretty good, too. Number five on the list. Then it goes Thunderball, No Time to Die, and the first Roger Moore film to appear on their list at number eight was The Spy Who Loved Me. In 1977. And that was pretty good. Honor Majesty's Secret Service, number nine. GoldenEye, that had Pierce Brosnan. That made the top 10. And one of my favorites, Live and Let Die, comes in way down at 16 on the list. So there you have it. But number one all-time Bond, Goldfinger, 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So movies are always subjective. You know, you see some of the movies that are highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes, and then you might watch them, and you're like, really? This got such a high rating?
Yeah, for sure. And what the only thing good I like about what Rotten Tomatoes does is they aggregate a lot of critics from all over the country, and then you can also kind of see what audiences say about it. So regular folks that maybe aren't movie nerds or get paid to review movies weigh in on it. So that's why I think it's kind of a good guideline. Because, you know, when I go to the movies, it's definitely the large popcorn, light on the butter. And then, depending on the time of day, if I go at night, I'm not having anything with caffeine. So it's a large, uncaffeinated soda. So ticket, popcorn, soda, I mean, that's $30. And then typically my wife will come along, and I've been known to pay for a movie ticket for my kids, even though they're grown now. So it can be an expensive night. And I don't want to waste my money on something like Caddyshack 2. Maybe the worst movie I've ever seen in the theater. I know there's others on the worst movies of all time, but I think Caddyshack 2 is the worst movie I've ever seen or paid to see in a theater, if memory serves. 14 minutes now in front of 7 o'clock here at News Talk 830 WCCO. Once again, you want to share favorite Bond movie? You can always do so on our talk and text line, 651-461-9222. 226. Still to come on the program tonight, we're going to talk MLB. Spring training underway in Arizona and Florida. Our good friend Scott Miller covers MLB. He's a contributor to the New York Times, and we'll talk about that. And the New York Yankees are changing their policy toward facial hair. This is huge news, sort of. And we'll get into that with Scott. Big change. And then a little bit later on, I think following the weather at 7:30, there's a story you're not going to want to miss, courtesy of the BBC. A stolen credit card was used to buy the winning lottery prize. Now the victim of the crime is offering to split the prize with the thieves. I kid you not. And we'll do that tonight at 7:30. And then Stephen Clark, who covers space flight for Ars Technica, will join us. And there continues to be growing noise about, why do we need the International Space Station? Why bother going to the moon? Elon Musk says we should be setting our sights on Mars right now. And we'll get Stephen's thoughts on that and what else is going on in the area of space flight. That's all coming up before we say goodbye tonight here on News Talk 830 WCCO. State tournaments in St. Paul this weekend at Roy Wilkins Auditorium. It is state gymnastics, and individual champions will be crowned today. We'll have a look at the results a little bit later on. Girls state hockey tournament, and we've got AA semifinals underway tonight, and Rosemount has just tied it up with Edina 1-1 early period number two. They get a goal 33 seconds into the period. So, once again, Hill Murray had the 1-0 lead after one, but Rosemount an early goal. And now we're knotted at one. Of course, Rosemount, the number 7 seed, upset number 2 seed Centennial Spring Lake Park yesterday. Hill Murray, the number 3 seed. Later on, it'll be Edina, the number 1, against Holy Family. Earlier in the day, you heard it during the news, phenomenal game. Jonathan, dare I say, an instant classic to open the semifinals today in 1A. Warroad and Orono go to not one, not two, but three overtimes today before Warroad's Caius Sandy, a power play goal at 1:30, or I should say, Lindsay Lorenzen at 1:20 in overtime period number three gets the winner. Zoe Lopez scored in the first for Orono. Kylo Sandy, the lone goal in the second period. No scoring in the third. No scoring in overtime number one. No scoring in overtime number two. And then Lindsay Lorenzen lights the lamp at the 1:20 mark to give Warroad a berth in the 1A title game on Saturday in St. Paul. And then the other 1A final, number one Dodge County beat Holy Angels 4-1. So Dodge County representing Southern Minnesota, Warroad representing Northern Minnesota, go at it for the 1A crown tomorrow. And then a couple other scores from today. 2A consolation semifinal, Andover beat Centennial Spring Lake Park 5-2. And Moorhead shut out Farmington 4-0. So Moorhead and Andover play at Tria Rink tomorrow for the consolation championship. So you're up to date on what's going on in girls hockey here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And then, of course, as I mentioned, gymnastics. And next week, we got the state wrestling tournament at the XL Energy Center, and they'll have eight mats when they get started and go through the weekend. They determine the team champions early and then individual champions next Saturday in St. Paul, and that is just another phenomenal state tournament event. Couple other sports headlines. As Jonathan Lowe mentioned earlier in the show, the Wild get back at it. They're in Detroit. They'll play the Red Wings tomorrow. And, folks, a rare Wild game on free over-the-air TV. Now, the Timberwolves have made the wise move, in my opinion, on putting some games on Care 11. And that's been nice. Selected games on Care 11 locally. And tomorrow's game is on Channel 5.
By the way, first game out of the chute from the break.
Yeah. No, and it's early. It's a matinee in Detroit. I think they dropped the puck at 11:30 yard time.
That's correct.
Yeah. And I think this is really cool. And I know we're never going to go back to the days where a lot of games are on free over-the-air TV. It's just not going to happen. I get that. But there is talk that this model is starting to expand, where team owners realize the value is making the product available for free. And people have just said, I'm not paying for satellite, or I'm not paying for cable, or an expensive streaming service, and making the games available for free. And that is really the beauty of what the NFL has been able to do. The one thing you can count on is you will see Viking regular season games on local TV. With rare exception. Even if they are on ESPN, say for instance, they would still make the game available to one of the local stations to carry over the air.
That's the thing, is that they, with the NFL teams, and they're still doing it with streaming services now. So, as far as I know. So, if you have a game that's going to be on Amazon Prime, the Thursday night game, or you're going to have something like that, Right. Then I believe still you're going to have those games available in market on Right. One of the local channels.
Yeah, 4, 5, 9, 11, they can bid on it. You know, they don't get it for free. But they can certainly bid on that, and it is indeed available. By the way, that Rosemont goal was waved off, so Hill Murray still has a 1-0 lead over at the X. So, anyway, we've got to run to a break. We've got the news and weather coming up here on News Talk 830-WCCO at 7 o'clock. And then, as I mentioned, we still got a lot of good guests lined up for you tonight, including Scott Miller. He's covered the major leagues for a long time. Once upon a time, the Pioneer Press here in the Twin Cities covered the Twins, and now he's out in Southern California. Scott Miller will join us following the news and weather, and we'll talk MLB here on CCO.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.